Greetings, fitness friends. Welcome to Coach RJ Radio. This is Ron Jones, Corporate Well Coach, live from Los Angeles in Southern California, where the surf is always up and health is hot. Today's show topic is gym safety. I recently just did a corporate presentation on this, and the feedback is really positive, so I'd like to share a few things with you that I will expand on from my presentation. Take about 30 minutes or so. And basically what I've done is just kind of summarize the things that people have asked me the last 10 years or so about being safe in the gym and exercise in general. But first, a couple personal stories, actually three, because one just happened this morning. The first one is the oldest one. It happened about 3 years ago, and I was at home in Atlanta. We have a full gym in our basement, Olympic bar, squat rack, kettlebells, balls, tubing, balance equipment, you name it. And we were down in the basement with our twins, Ronnie and Cade. And they were about 2 years old. My wife Candace was down there, and I was getting the Olympic bar off the front of the squat rack. And if you know anything about squat racks, you can put the hangers on the outside if you're going to do something like a power clean outside the cage. So I had the bar outside the cage. I was picking it up off the rack, which is probably a couple feet off the ground. I looked over my left shoulder to remind my wife about keeping track of the twins in the gym so we're safe. My daughter, Ronnie, the ballistic bear, ran around my right side right into the end of the 45-pound Olympic bar, smacked her upside the head. And I've got to tell you, as a parent, that's probably one of the most sickening feelings I've ever had, hurting my own child. Fortunately for us, it didn't break her jaw or give her a concussion of any kind, but it definitely hurt her a little bit. The other story happened a couple years ago, and while I was at work, my wife was upstairs. The twins went down in the basement gym again and decided to play with the dumbbell rack. Now, they know the dumbbells are off limits unless we're down there and we give them the little, 1, 2, or 3 pound vinyl-coated dumbbells. But, of course, they wanted to check out the bottom rack of the dumbbells. The bottom rack of the dumbbells had dumbbells as heavy as 55 pounds. Somehow they teamed up and threw the dumbbells off the rack, top and bottom shelves, including the 55-pound dumbbells. Now, at the time, they only weighed about 30 pounds. I'd give anything for a surveillance video of the twin terrorist throwing those off the wall. And, of course, when they hit the wall, they put great big holes in the wall through the sheetrock. But the point for safety here is, had they toppled off the front of the rack, they could have damaged their feet or definitely some pinch hazards with their little fingers. The other one just happened this morning. The twins are now 5. They're almost 6. My wife was upstairs on the computer. They went down in the basement gym again, and they decided to, or at least my son, Cade, I have a boy and a girl. Cade is the boy. Ronnie is the girl. Cade decided to deadlift my Dragon Door RKC full iron kettlebell. He chose the 24 kilogram, the heaviest one. That's 53 pounds. And he did deadlift it, and he did get it off the ground, which is really amazing because he doesn't even weigh as much as the kettlebell. He tried to do something with it, and obviously it didn't go well, and he dropped it on my daughter's foot. So I'm laughing now because she's okay, but another incident in the gym with the twin terrorist. It didn't go well for Ronnie's foot today. Her foot is rather sore and a little bit discolored, but we think she's going to be okay. But, just beware. There are some things that can happen at home, especially with kids when they're around gym equipment. For those of you saying, well, you've had all these incidents in the gym, it's probably safer not to let the kids get around fitness equipment. I'd have to argue with you on that point. They're far safer having a few mishaps in the gym than sitting on the couch watching television playing video games, because in America, There's screening for high blood pressure and diabetic type conditions as early as age 2 to 3 years old. So I'll take a few bruises and bumps over diabetes and high blood pressure for sure. But anyway, with the regular part of the show here, I want to start with moving well. I think before you go into the gym and do anything, you really need to think about how you're moving. I've gotten more and more into this. Probably the last 6 or 7 years, I've really focused more on movement. And we could talk about this for hours, but basically you want to examine how your joints move. If you have imbalance in your joints, and this goes right back to safety, whether you're using body weight or a cable machine or Olympic plates or kettlebells, it doesn't matter. If you have joint dysfunction and imbalance in your joints, this can create a shear force on the surfaces of the joint. So you have these opposing forces that are out of balance, and the joint is pulling away from each other. The surfaces are pulling away from each other in a simplistic kind of way of explanation. Basically, this can cause microtrauma. At the least, you're going to have some kind of microtrauma, which can mean pain. At the worst, you're going to get hurt. And it could be something that requires some surgery for the joint. So no matter if I'm working with college football, which I do, or corporate clients that vary in ages from 20 up to 70 plus now, or senior citizens, I've worked with seniors as old as 92, you really have to look at how people move. And as much as possible, you want to take those negative movement patterns out, clean up those movement patterns. If you move well, then you can load, you can add weight, you can go fast, you can have good durability, you can train and exercise for years and decades, for the most part, problem-free. I mean, there are things that will happen once in a while. I mean, that happens to me and everyone. But I tell you, the more I learn about movement, the more I bind to this concept that the best thing we can do before we hit the floor in the gym with any kind of external resistance is to take a quick look at that movement in the joint itself. Some people go into this at the extreme level. They might do assessments that can take up to 2 hours. I'm really busy. I've got hundreds of clients and their families. So, you know, what I do is I use my dynamic warm-up. Yes, it's a joint prep warm-up, but really for me, it's an assessment tool. I can look at those 10 movement patterns in my warm-up and pretty much tell where people are having problems, and then I can do some remedial work with them. But anyway, just think about that. No matter what you like to do in the gym, what piece of equipment, doesn't matter. Think about moving well and spend a little bit of time going into that, and I think you'll be well served. Now, the rest of the program here is in alphabetical order. There's no hierarchy here. It's just by letter of the alphabet. I'm going to start with belts. I get a lot of people asking me, not as many today as a few years ago, but do belts help prevent back injuries? And generally, the answer is no. Lifting belts don't prevent back injuries. For those of you that don't know what these are, they're usually made out of heavy leather, real wide, especially in the lumbar, the low back. Sometimes they're made out of a heavy kind of webbing, but usually they're leather. A lot of the heavy power lifter type folks wear them. But basically, what you want to do is increase your core integrity, your deep core strength, and that stabilizes your spine. If you get used to wearing a belt all the time, the belt ends up taking over the job of the muscles and the tendons, and therefore they get kind of lazy and weak. And that doesn't promote back injury prevention when your back stabilizers are weak. I'll tell you what does help prevent back injury is very clean technique in the weight room, whether you're doing an Olympic squat with 600 pounds in your back or you're doing a bodyweight squat. If you have good form and technique, that can help prevent injury. And then we go back to how you move. If you have hip dysfunction or some kind of dysfunction in your spine and you're trying to do a squat with an Olympic bar on your back or some other form of resistance, you can end up getting jacked up and hurt. So I'm going to keep coming back to movement over and over in the program today. But to summarize, you know, belts don't prevent injuries. Good form, technique, movement does. There are a few exceptions. I mean, if you're doing a really heavy max power lift, one rep max type of thing, then yeah, okay, you know, a belt might be a little bit of extra protection in that one incident. But for all general purposes, even with my college football players, we stopped using belts years ago. We started doing core bridging. McGill out of Canada has some great research on that. Core stabilization, these bridging plank type positions, best thing you can do to prevent back injuries from a training aspect beyond just, you know, moving well in the joints. The next point here is breathing. A lot of people ask me, should you breathe in the way out? Should you breathe in on the way in, or lifting the weight up or down? And my general response to most people I deal with is just breathe. It doesn't really matter. I mean, for most of the general population, what matters is that you don't tense up and get nervous and hold your breath and never breathe, and you know, you get kind of lightheaded and fall over on the floor. There are some exceptions to this. I mean, well, let me take a step back. If you're going by the textbook, you want to breathe out as you exert, and as you rest, you want to breathe in. So if you were doing a standing bicep curl, we'll keep it real simple with the example. You've got dumbbells, the little hand weights in your hand, down by your thighs. As you lift them up towards your chest, you breathe out because you're exerting. As you let the weights back down and rest, you breathe in. Exceptions. If you're doing kettlebell training, especially with hard style, you know, what we do is we use pressurized breathing like martial artists or boxers. And that actually is a safety mechanism for us. We want to pressurize the spine and protect that spinal column during exertion, especially in those ballistic or heavy type movements. So there are some exceptions. For the general population going to the gym, you want to get on a machine or do some light to moderate strength training. Basically, just remember to breathe. And if you want to get into it a little more detail, as you exert or work, you'll breathe out. And as you rest or in between reps, you'll breathe in. If you're doing kettlebells, it's a completely different kind of breathing. And we use pressurized breathing, and we release the breath in just short puffs at the end of the cycle or the range of motion or whatever it is we're doing. So that's an entirely different topic, kettlebell breathing. Children. Commercial gyms, many gyms today now have age limits for kids. But of course, like I mentioned, a lot of us are using home exercise equipment as well. And there are some issues, as I mentioned, especially with the twins in the Jones household. So I think what's really important with kids, and I'm a parent having twins at home the last 5 years from day one. Actually, in day two, they were in the gym around the equipment. So it was really important for me to acclimate them to that and raise them as physical culturists, which they are. They're definitely fitness kids. But you want to be really careful to mark off live areas. After the Olympic bar incident with Ronnie, we really did a better job improving our process. So what we would do is take these little orange safety cones, and we mark off these live or line of fire areas in the gym when we're doing whatever it is we're doing. We establish these rules, and they can't go past these lines, or they're not supposed to. They are twin terrorists, though, so we have to keep an eye on them. The kettlebells, and we use a lot of kettlebells at our house, and some of you listening are probably into that scene. You know, they use swing patterns, and their line of fire, live area, is a lot more live than anything else you're going to see. So definitely have some hard line rules with kettlebells if you're using them at home around the kids. Obviously, there are pinch issues, and like Ronnie getting the 24K dropped in her foot. But what I'm really talking about now is that line of fire, that live area. What is that? Usually, it's about a 5x5 area around your working area with the kettlebell when you have it in your hand. But we try to mark off a little bit more. I want to make some really specific comments here about motorized treadmills specifically. I saw a special on one of the news programs a few years ago on hand injuries in small children with motorized treadmills. And really, to be honest with you, I had no idea how catastrophic these injuries were or that kids are even getting injured at all. But what can happen is as the belt's spinning around, and mind you, the parents on there working their butts off and concentrating on, you know, their exercise program, and a lot of parents today might have an iPod on or something covering their ears, so they're not even really listening, paying attention. But the kid can come in behind the treadmill, and if you think about the belt on the top of the runners there, you know, the belt's traveling backwards, and then it makes a real tight loop, and it comes underneath, and as it rounds that corner behind the machine, there's a little gap between the housing of the machine and the belt. And that gap apparently is just big enough for small children to get their fingers in there. Now, you can think they might be trying to climb up on the belt with mommy or daddy to play with them or get up there where they're at, and their hand just gets sucked right into that crack. And basically what they can get is a degloving injury where the muscles and tendons and nerves get sucked right off the bone. I mean, it's just a catastrophic hand injury. There aren't a lot of hand specialist surgeons around today. So you want to be really careful and do everything you can to prevent a hand injury with small children. I think the new treadmills are being built better, and that gap, I looked at some brand new treadmills last week, the gap is really small, but I'm thinking that the older treadmills, the gap was larger and it created more of a hazard. But anyway, regardless, even with a small gap, if you've got small fingers, I mean, you know, it's like water. It kind of finds its way anywhere, and I think small children are that way. They kind of find their way into that problem spot, and Murphy's Law will happen. So, you know, think about unplugging the treadmill or creating even some live area markings so the kids don't get in around the treadmill. The other week, my wife, we have a spin bike at home, and the chain came off, and she had the guard off the bike. And I walked in and saw the guard off. Well, the bike wasn't immobilized. It was still possible to spin the wheel around and get their hands caught between the chain and the sprocket. And if you think about it, you know, the fingers are very small with children, and they could get definitely lacerated or pinched or maybe even cut off. So I you know, cinched the wheel down on the spin bike wheel so it wouldn't move at all, and basically immobilized it. Took it out of service. So just think about that, you know, especially with the motorized type machines in the gym at home. Elliptical trainer, you know, there are wheels that go back and forth, but man, that treadmill, that thing is really ripping around, especially if you're running on it. So just keep in mind that your kids could get in behind that and could be an issue. Clothing. Well, basically with clothing, the next topic is you just want clothing that's loose enough to move but not get in your way. I know the style today is to wear a lot of, you know, real baggy clothing, and sometimes the pant legs can be scraping the ground and kind of fraying, and while it looks cool, it can get caught on mechanisms or machinery, and if nothing else, cause a trip hazard. Another thing about clothing is that it can act as a protective barrier, especially in a commercial gym where you're getting down these benches, you have no idea who was there before, they might have been wiped off, they might be disinfected every night, they might be disinfected once a week, and unfortunately in some gyms they're not disinfected at all. So if you have especially your back covered, that is a protective barrier. It's actually comes right back to safety. Especially with guys, I think, we tend to have more blemishes on our upper back, and especially young men. And, you know, with MRSA, the staph bacteria, you only need a small portal of entry. You might not see that hole. It could be like a pinhole. It could be just a pimple that's popped and oozing a little bit. I know it sounds gross, but, I mean, these things go on all the time. If that person with that open wound essentially lays down on the bench, and then you come in and your back is open and you lay down and you've got a little sore in your back, boom, you know, you can get a type of infection there. So the clothing that you wear in the gym is also a safety mechanism, can act as a barrier. So you might want to think about that. Some people prefer to wear more clothing in the gym than others, and that's just you know, to keep muscles and tendons warm. The guys that taught me how to power lift, basically, they tended to wear long sleeve sweatshirts and long sleeve t-shirts, and they were big on keeping everything warmed up. But that's more of a personal preference. Free weights. You know, are free weights safe? I get a lot of people asking me that, and people are really afraid of free weights sometimes, especially some of the women. My opinion is that free weights can definitely be safe, and in many ways they're safer and better for you if you know how to use them. They're not as easy to use as a machine. It's not like you just sit down on a bench, put the pin in the hole, and go. They take a little more technique training, but something like dumbbells can independently work left and right side instead of the machine equaling out that amount of force that's required to move that weight. Because whether you know it or not, or you think about it or not, you're probably cheating or compensating with your dominant side or your strong side. If you're going to lay down on a bench and do a bench press machine with a bar you know, straight across connecting your left to your right, you'll end up pushing harder with your dominant and your left side won't get as much work. If you have independent dumbbells, both sides have to do an equal amount of work. So it can be a little bit better for you. And in some ways, it comes back to safety. If you're working independently, you're trying to stabilize those dumbbells, it's a little bit better for your joint. That extra stabilization challenge, it's going to help your movement probably a little bit more. So yes, I think free weights can be safe as long as you have the right training. And if you do them right, they might even help you move better. Housekeeping. Beyond hygiene, I'm going to make some comments on hygiene in a minute, but beyond hygiene, it's really important in the gym setting, whether you're at home or the commercial gym, to rack your weights and put everything back where it belongs. I can't tell you the number of gyms I've been into in different cities around the country where people just don't have the common courtesy to put things away. They leave things out on the floor, and then people can trip and fall, and if nothing else, just a pain in the butt to be putting away someone else's mess. On occasion, you get some of the metal head type people that want to make a macho statement and leave the 150-pound dumbbell on the floor, knowing well that most of the people can't even pick them up. So that happens too. But you really want to try to put everything back. A good gym is going to have a place for everything. The dumbbells have a rack. The weight plates have a tree. The balls have a rack or an area. The mats are stacked up someplace or even hanging on some kind of peg system. The tubing can be hanging on peg systems or draped over something. You want to put things back where they belong and keep the floor open. Hygiene. Next point. Probably one of the most important gym points in terms of safety today is just being aware of hygiene and practicing good hygiene. There's been a real rise in bacterial infections like MRSA, which I mentioned a little bit earlier. And if you don't know what MRSA is, I mean, I've got a whole presentation on that and some handouts on my website. You should research that a little bit if you don't know what it is, but it's a superbug bacteria. And in the worst case scenario, which doesn't happen often, but it can take a limb off in 2 days and kill you in five. Most of the MRSA infections can be treated as an outpatient. And the key with MRSA is that you get in and you diagnose it right away. It's not something you can do yourself, by the way. You need to go to a hospital or some type of health clinic and get a professional evaluation on that. But in terms of hygiene, your best defense is just simple hand washing. That'll go a long way with the flu and a lot of other things too. So just remember, wash your hands. You know, especially when you come out of the gym, keeping skin covered, it comes in contact with surfaces. We go back to the clothing safety. You know, if you have a long sleeve t-shirt, it's a little more protection than a short sleeve. I don't like wearing a lot of clothing when I'm working out. I create a lot of heat with the things that I do, so I usually go for a short sleeve shirt. But I never leave my back open if I'm in a commercial setting where I'm going to put my back on a surface where someone else has been. I'm going to keep my back covered up. And so just think about that. Depending on the gym you're at, they might have a spray bottle on the wall with some wipes, and they would like you to spray down every single surface that you sit or lie upon. Other gyms use these things called gym wipes, and we use those with my corporate clients, and they work really well. They have a solution in there already that doesn't damage the screens of some of the cardio monitors. There's enough liquid on the wipe itself to pretty much saturate what you're trying to get clean, but it won't get down in the cracks of the electronic equipment. The problem with the spray bottles is a lot of people will start spraying the panels of the cardio equipment, and that liquid can get down and short out some of the componentry. But in terms of hygiene, you know, spraying or wiping is fine. Just remember that, you know, hand washing is your best defense, and having some education on this too. Also, you want to take those gym clothes and separate them or at least wash them on hot with your towels and things like that. It's recommended that you wash them on hot, dry them on hot, and use bleach if possible. And again, there's some things on my website at ronjones.org if you want to look into MRSA a little bit more. The next point is lifting position. And basically, you want to, no matter what exercise you're doing, you want to try to get in the right position for each specific exercise. With a lot of the machines, they're going to position, you know, they've kind of pre-thought the positioning for you. So, you know, you just sit down on the thing and go. Sometimes with a leg extension or a leg curl machine, they'll have a little dot on the arm that articulates there. And that dot, most people don't know this, but you're supposed to line up the pivot point in your knee with the pivot point of the machine so those two joints don't work in an opposing manner. So think about lining your joint up with the machine on the leg extension or leg curl. Although, and this relates to safety, I don't use that machine anymore. I don't think it's very healthy. Most trainers abandoned that years ago. But some machines do have these dots or markers, and they want you to kind of position your body a certain way in them. But anyway, just think about, you know, generally positioning yourself in front of that, you know, weight or the dumbbell rack as you pick the weights off the bench. Usually with most lifts, you're going to be on your feet. Your feet should be about shoulder width apart, maybe a little bit more. It's going to vary a little bit by exercise. Always lift with your legs too if you can. Lifting the weights on and off the tree of Olympic plates or dumbbells, use your legs instead of your low back to pick things up. How many reps should you do? And people ask me that. I'm afraid I'm going to get hurt if I do too many reps, or if I lift too heavy, I might get hurt if I'm only doing a 3-rep set. And I'm going to generalize here. Basically, the quantity of reps, and rep, if you don't know, is a repetition. So if I have a dumbbell in my hand that's at hand weight, and I curl it up one time towards my chest, and I let it go all the way back down to my thigh, that's one repetition. We call it rep for short. Basically, when people start, they need about, and this is textbook, they need about 12 to 15 repetitions per exercise. As you get in a little bit better shape, you can start working down to about 8 to 12. The reason for that, it takes your tendons a little bit of time to get in shape, more so than the belly of the muscle. So while you might be able to get the weight up, the tendon integrity isn't quite there, so you want to give that another few weeks to develop. It's a little bit safer for people to do a little higher rep workout when they start strength conditioning, and then as you get stronger all the way around, you can start doing lower rep sets. So you're going to load more weight, but do less repetitions of that weight. The way you set the rep count, really, is think about the last rep you can safely do. If I watched you do a set, and on 10 repetitions, at the 10th rep, you looked really good, your form was clean, your breathing was there, everything was fine. And on the 11th rep, you started to give me some body language. I started to see you compensate a little bit and kind of shimmy or shuck and jive a little bit. And then the 12th rep, you were completely out of touch. Then the 10th rep is where you were really where you needed to stop. So you want to stop before you start to compensate to the point where you're going to get hurt. So it's the last rep you can safely do. I could have 10 people there doing the same exercise and 10 different weights. They all have a different amount of weight, and they could all be at a different rep count. You know, it just depends on what the last rep is that you can safely do. So that's a good rule of thumb without breaking form. Shoes. Should you wear shoes or not? Oh, I really had to rethink this getting into the world of kettlebell training and hanging out with some martial arts friends that I have now. I was taught in school, and this is textbook, always wear lace shoes, lace them up tight, protect your feet, keep them covered. And I think for general purposes, that's a really great idea. However, there are some exceptions. If you're doing kettlebell training, we train barefooted, and it's really a safety issue for us. So this goes back to safety. We get a better transfer of force in a straight line when our heels are right against the ground. The problem with shoes today is that they really have too much shock absorption, especially in gyms where you're loading the foot explosively or doing any kind of power lifting or something like that. For kettlebell training, that can actually cause an injury in our knee or our ankle. The forceful loading on our lower extremities on that ground base of support, if we're wearing the wrong kind of shoe, can cause our ankle or our foot to shift, and that force leak, it's called, can compensate our form all the way up through the knee and up into the hips and the back. So for us, we're either going to have bare feet, or we're going to wear a very hard sole shoe, like a Converse All-Star or something of that nature. If you look at power lifters, they'll wear very hard sole shoes, because when they're power lifting, they don't want any force leaks. They don't want a squishy shoe, at least the ones that know what they're doing. They're not going to be wearing a squishy shoe. If you're just doing light to moderate lifting like most of the people in the country do when they go into the gym, you know, your standard cross-training shoe, running shoe, whatever it is shoe, you know, should be fine. Just lace it up and you'll be okay. But just keep in mind that there are a few exceptions. Situational awareness. This is something I want to talk about. Most people don't talk about this in terms of going to the commercial gym or coming home from the commercial gym, but you might not be aware of this. There are a lot of robberies and attacks and even rapes that can occur in parking lots of a commercial gym setting. So if you think about it, you've got a lot of people running in there after work or before work, and they're thinking about a lot of things, but they're probably not thinking about who's in the parking lot watching them. And you're going to make yourself more vulnerable if you're not aware of your situation. So especially with the ladies, you know, if you're going to the gym, here's some tips for you. If you've got valuables, ideally you leave them at home. You don't take them to the gym. A lot of cars get broken into at the gym because people leave stuff in there, and the bad guys in the parking lot know they're going to be in there for at least 45 to 60 minutes. They pop the car open and they take whatever they want. It's not always possible to do that. If you're going to work, you got to take your stuff with you. So what I do, and I travel a lot for my business, is sometimes I might have things with me. So I'll make sure they're in the back of my car, covered up, before I ever get into the parking lot. I don't want to have anyone see me taking things out of the front of my car and putting them in the hatch behind my car, because they're watching me put all these valuables away. So I want to do that before. I just want to get out with my keys and my towel and my water bottle, and I want to go into the gym. I'm going to keep an eye out all over the parking lot. I'm not paranoid, but I'm aware. And I want to thank John Spisano, my RKC martial arts instructor friend, for helping me with this. Really create more situational awareness with me and my clients. Inside gyms, there are still many thefts. I have some friends in law enforcement, and they've told me there are theft issues in gyms and lockers being broken into. So, you know, if you can't leave your stuff at home, I'll tell you what I do when I go into a gym is I keep my wallet with me. I just stick it in my pocket. It's a little bit cumbersome at times, but I'd rather have it with me than leave it in my car or in a locker where someone could go in there and quickly break the locker open and get my stuff. Also, keep your ears open, not just your eyes, but your ears. I know the MP3 iPod players, all that's really cool, but there's a time and a place for that. If you're running in a trail, if you're running outside, especially in the dark, where you don't know your area, or there aren't a lot of people around, you might want to keep your ears open, especially the ladies. The worst thing you could do is go into that dark parking lot with your iPod on and clueless about what's going on. There are a lot of desperate people out there today. A lot of people out of work, and they might be tempted to do something that under normal circumstances they wouldn't be. So just keep an eye out on yourself. Situational awareness. The next topic here is speed. And what I tell people to do is, and we go back to movement again, if you move well in your joints, okay, you don't have all that shear force, you've got efficient movement, that means you're going to move safer, then you can move faster. The last thing I add with my training is speed. I want to make sure people move well first, and they move well slowly, and then if they can do that, then we can accelerate and do something faster. I love people to train fast, and I think ballistic training has its place even for senior citizens, and here's why. Sooner or later, you'll be faced with a moment of truth. It's not if, it's when. And that moment of truth could be a bad guy in the parking lot of the gym trying to jump you and take your stuff. It could be like I was running today in the bike path here in Valencia in Southern California, and I stepped in. I like to run off the trail. It's a little bit softer for my legs, and I stepped on a stick or a little hole or something like that, and my ankle started to roll. And so I had to move quickly. Okay, if I trained in slow motion all the time, I wouldn't have the ability to pull out of that, and I'd end up twisting my ankle or breaking it. So I think speed training is extremely important. It's very beneficial. But it's safer for beginners to lift slower. So you want to lift with control. Don't get out of control and be throwing things around and having your form break. A classic example of this, especially in a high school gym, is going in there and watching the young teenage boys do something like a bicep curl, where they're standing up and they've got a bar or some dumbbells. They've got probably twice as much weight as they need to be lifting anyway. And they're swaying back and forth, and they're using a lot of other things that they shouldn't be using probably to do the curl. And they're really putting their back at risk. When you look at the lines on their back and the curvature and the positioning of their back in relation to their hip joints, they're putting themselves at risk. So, you know, explosive, fast lifting is great, but just make sure you can control it, lift with control all the time. Spotters. What is a spotter first? Well, it's a person that kind of helps you with your lift. Usually you don't need this in a machine lifting type position. But if you're lifting with Olympic weights, which are free weights, you know, you might need someone to help you get the weight up or let it down, or if you get fatigued or something slips, they can grab it and kind of pull it off of you. So it just depends on the situation. I think they're a good idea if you're going to be doing heavy, maximal type lifting. I rarely have a spotter to work with when I do Olympic type lifts, so you know I have to notch it down a little bit, you know, just to be safe. I will admit, one time I didn't do that. I was doing a decline Olympic bench press in the gym alone, and I was lifting heavy. So you know, I'll admit I was being stupid. And I got stuck with the bar on my chest. I couldn't get it up because I went into fatigue, and it took me about 15 minutes to get the Olympic bar off my chest as the bar was crushing my chest in. So take my word for it. It's a very uncomfortable feeling to have an Olympic bar crushing your chest. You don't really want to do that. So, you know, if applicable, you know, try to use a spotter. It's a good idea. But go back to lifting what you can control. You know, the last rep you do should be the safe rep, right? So if you're losing form and breaking down, you shouldn't be doing another rep. If you're straining too much, you're compensating, you shouldn't be doing another rep. When I got stuck under the bar, I violated that rule and I paid for it. Stance, basic rule, shoulder width or slightly wider. I mentioned that a little bit earlier. If you go super wide base, you lose your power. And if you go really narrow, you don't have enough basis support to have a lot of stability. So for general purposes, you know, I like to get my feet just a little bit wider than my hips. That will vary depending on what I'm doing. But, I mean, that's kind of a textbook response. So stance, shoulder width or slightly wider. So those are the big hitters on gym safety for me. You know, we covered a few different topics. You don't want to move well. Look at joint movement so you don't have shear force in your joints. Belts don't prevent injuries. Good form and technique does, and moving well in the joints prevents back injuries. Make sure to breathe when you're working out, unless you're doing kettlebell training, and then it's a very specific type of breathing pattern, but generally breathe out when you exert, breathe in when you rest. Make sure you mark off live areas or line of fire areas in your home gym area with your children, and be really careful those motorized pieces of equipment like treadmills because of the degloving injuries with the hands. Clothing, just don't let it get in the way. It can also act as a barrier to help prevent certain types of infection risks. Free weights can be safer if you know how to use them, but they require a little more training, so be careful with that. Housekeeping, just basically put things away so people don't trip. Hygiene, wash your hands. Be aware of things like MRSA. Wipe things off, disinfect as the gym requires you to do so, or take care of it on your own. Lifting position, just look at the machine if you're on one of those, and there might be some guidelines posted. A lot of the machines today have little placards or diagrams there showing you how to sit and where. If not, ask somebody that knows. Quantity of reps, beginners about 12 to 15 with standard lifting exercises. When you're in more shape, about 8 to 12. This is going to vary if you get into kettlebells and other types of lifts, but for textbook kind of stuff, that's the general recommendation. Shoes, for most people, lace up some shoes, you should be okay. Kettlebells, you're going to be barefooted, ideally, or have some hard sole shoes on. Situational awareness, just be careful at the parking lot. Who's out there and who's watching you, and be aware of that, ladies, especially. speed, lift what you can control. If you move well and you have control, you can go fast. And shoulder width stance, and that's it. That's gym safety. It's been great talking to you tonight. I hope you use some of this information to keep yourself safe, because we really need people to exercise, not just for a few months or a few weeks or a few days, but for life. Exercise is really the fountain of youth, if there ever was one. So the cool music today is provided by my surf guitar friend, Laramie Dean. Check him out at laramiedean.com or on MySpace under Laramie Dean Music. Remember, music is good for your health. Tell him Coach RJ sent you. Until next time, fitness friends, get fit, be strong, and keep surfing the endless waves of wellness for optimal health and fitness.